Hello, everyone, and I'm back with Jim Scott, author of Wanderings and Sojourns. This is his memoirs on five continents and three oceans. And actually, Jim, I forgot to mention to people how to get the book. How do they get your book?
There's a number of ways. It's available through Amazon on Kindle. It's soon to be brought out on Kobo and Android and whatever those other e-reader things are. It's going to be on everything that you can put on a gadget.
Okay.
And you can also buy it through the website at Friesen Press.
Friesen.
Friesen. Friesen Press.com. That's the publishers. Or you can get a hold of me. I've got a website, which is www.wanderingsandsojourns.com.
Okay.
You can access it through that or...
A print copy?
Yeah, you can get print copies either through through that website, either from the publisher or from Amazon. There's links on
that
there.
That sounds good.
Or if you're in the area of Whitchurch, Stouffville, King, anywhere around here, just get a hold of me and I'll get you a copy.
Well, you attend the WCYR meetings.
I do, every
Sunday,
month. Yeah.
A Sunday a month. They can find that website, which is www.wcyork.ca.
That's correct.
And I believe you've got a work in the progress for audio?
Yeah, I've done several readings and people have come up to me after the readings, and especially for the poems, have asked me if I have a CD where they can listen to the poems with me reading them, because apparently they like how I read them. And
I can appreciate that.
So, thank you. So I've decided to take the leap, and I'm going to be recording, reading some of the poems, and they should be available at some stage from my website, where you can download them as a collection or individually if there's some favorites. And also have a CD available for people.
Okay.
But I'm not quite there yet.
So that's down the road.
Yep.
But let's go back to the book that you do have finished here with us today, talking about it. And before the break, we were just getting into the timing, that it's not a chronological story.
No. My life hasn't really happened with any sort of logistical rationale behind it. I've ended up places where I never expected to be. There's several places I've made sincere efforts to get to that I've never reached, and everything sort of happens as it happens in my life. In fact, I've given up planning because everything I've planned hasn't happened, and all the really fantastic things that have happened were hardly ever planned. So, you know, that kind of tells me something. So the book itself kind of follows that theme. It's random. My life's been so random, and it would be silly to try and put that in any sort of clear chronological order or any sort of structure, because my life is just hasn't been structured.
That's right. And actually, I think that's why I don't feel any guilt at all for the reading it the way I'm doing, which is picking the favorite ones, going through and finding out.
I was joking the other day, said this makes a wonderful bathroom book, because you can just, you know, when you've got a few minutes, you can just pick it up and open it at any page and just, you know, read something different.
That's right. And I'm amazed what, as I'm flipping through, what keeps jumping out at me. One was the lambing shed.
Yeah, that was really interesting because in a way, it wasn't travel, but it was. It was traveling back to where I grew up.
Yeah.
Only this time I did it with my own children. And that I found to be a real adventure.
Yes.
And that's one of the beautiful things about a traveler's attitude. I think you can find real travel in your own backyard. You don't have to go
far. And I think people forget that when they do the family trip home. There may be some obligation to meet family, but this can be a really neat event with your children.
Yeah, I'd hardly been back there for possibly 20 years. You know, the odd week here and there to visit people or attend a funeral or, you know, something.
Right.
But not a proper visit. But this time I went back, as actually the occasion was to get my youngest son christened in England.
Oh, okay.
And it was mind-blowing to be going through the areas where I grew up with my then very young growing up children and seeing a lot of what I knew then through their eyes. It was like almost like traveling to a different place.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yes. And I think there was that feeling of an homage to a different era. Because I don't want to give it away. The people should really read that one for themselves because it was so neat. I can just see you as the audience telling the speaker, you've got a problem with that lamb.
Yeah.
That was so great.
Yeah.
What timing.
And again, the difference between tourists and travelers right there. I was a coachload of tourists came in just as the lambs were giving birth, and you know, I was kind of looking at the practical side, thinking, oh, that's a breech berth, whereas the tourists were just going, ooh, ah, you know, yeah, isn't that cute sort of thing.
That's right.
And, you know, you just pick up experiences as you go. And
I'd be interested in hearing what your daughter's story on that is now, because her perspective would be really neat.
It would. She's traveling on her own now. She's down in the British Virgin Islands, where she was born.
Okay.
And doing a gap year from Carlton, which might turn into a gap life, because she's got the travel bug pretty badly now.
Oh, no.
I think it's in our genes.
Uh-huh. But I think that was something that I took away from some of these stories, is we've had the place, the Machu Picchu. Mm-hmm. We've got the person, the people, and the timing, having family history kind of pull into your story as well as a traveler.
Yeah. I'm like all my children are keen on traveling as well. My eldest son's in Ireland right now. He spent a lot of his time in East Africa.
Okay.
And he's definitely following in my footsteps. My daughter's just setting off to follow in my footsteps by the look of it. And my youngest son, actually this coming week, is going back to where he was born too, in the British Virgin Islands. And I think this is going to be the start of his adventures, because he's of the same age as I was when I first went to sea, which was the start of it all for me. So I think him going back to where he was born and hanging out there for a while is going to be the start of it all for him too. So.
Actually, that's right. What started you was really a job.
Actually, it was a little bit the other way around. I looked for a job that could get me traveling.
Oh, okay.
I didn't travel because of the job. I took the job because of the travel.
Gotcha.
I'd already been bitten by the bug at a very local level through working with the Royal Naval Reserve when I was 15, 16 years old, traveling to ports in Europe and what have you. And I thought, well, I like this. I decided to go further and pursue a career in that field. And it worked.
And you've certainly come away with a lot of good stories. I wanted to go back to people, because I think maybe I'm more drawn to the people than the places. I liked the characters. I shouldn't say characters. They were living beings at the Machu Picchu. But I'm flipping through the book, and for some reason, the native stories keep coming up for me. You've actually done native travels here in Canada.
You don't have to go far to find different cultures. And there's a couple of stories in the book, one in particular, about how I've really got to learn about Aboriginal culture through a shaman that lives in the next village to me. English was his second language. His native Mohawk was his first language. And I just find that I drive 5 minutes up the road and I'm in another world with another culture, with a whole different way of looking at life. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm a little bit static now in my life, the learning still continues. And the way to see other things through other eyes is still right there in my own backyard.
Now, actually, if you could go a little bit into that story, I think you were on a job or something when you met him.
No, he was actually roofing the house I'm in.
He was doing the work.
And we just got chatting, and the friendship formed from there. And I actually provide him with all the sage that he uses, which is one of his four sacred medicines, because he hasn't got any sage plants in his garden, and I've got this overtaken my garden.
Okay.
So, we swap gifts, and there's never any money involved. It's always gifts and just company. It's wonderful.
What do you think about leaving our audience with a little passage with him?
I'd love to. I'd love to.
All right. We'll do that. And thank you so much, Jim, for coming. I appreciate you traveling here to do this interview with me and letting our people know about your wanderings and sojourns. There is a copy at the library if you're not contacting Jim on the web. And I'm going to sit back and enjoy.
Thank you very much. The pleasure was mine. He pulled over a box with many compartments, each filled with different coloured beads. Makes me a little sad that today we use ready-made resin beads. When I was a kid, we still used porcupine quills that we dyed the different colours ourselves. Or we'd cut the hollow centres of a feather and dye that. Or make beads from the coloured stones or shells we gathered from the creeks. Today it's all too easy. You know, I seen dream catchers with Made in China stickers on them selling for $4.99 in the stores. Made me want to cry. Dream catchers is about the spirit. You can't mass produce that in China. No, they wasn't dream catchers, though. They were bits of plastic made to look like dream catchers. But they wasn't dream catchers. They wouldn't work. There was no doubt in the student's mind that the shaman truly believed dream catchers possessed a real and vital energy and purpose. As such, in the ways of his people's doctrine, they could not be made by anything but sincere personal effort. each must be unique and individually instilled with the spiritual qualities of the natural beings and elements selected to suit the reason for its creation and the person to whom it would be assigned. You know about the four sacred colors. We talked on that before. So pick out the four colors from the beads and put them in the right order on the twine for them feathers. The student was careful to get it right. The four sacred colors were very important, for they represented the four sacred directions of the wind, the four transitions of a person's journey through life, the four colors of humankind, the four seasons of the sun's passage, the four phases of a person's spirit, and more. He knew the order was critical, for it represented the cycle of so much in the natural and ethereal realms, and to place them out of sequence would be to generate a disruptive energy in the aura of the dreamcatcher. His efforts were rewarded with, "You learn good," from his mentor. But I still have to think hard about the order, because I get confused between the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe ways. Remember at that art show when I almost walked into you and the other guys because I was going the wrong way around the food table? Well, that was because I'd just been reading about the Anishinaabe follow the sun's path around the earth, and so do everything clockwise, where you guys follow the rotation of the earth and so go anti-clockwise. Yeah, the older man chuckled. Strange how seeing exactly the same process through two different sets of eyes can lead to the exact opposite interpretation and create conflicting actions. He left that one hanging in the air between them for the younger man to ponder. So who's right, then? The shaman thought about that before saying, "Neither. If one was right, the other would have to be wrong. Neither is wrong. They're both just seeing it as they see it. In the big picture, it's the same thing, but to each it's different. So they're both right, and neither is wrong. One sees the path of the sun going round the world, the other sees the path of the world turning, and..." He grinned that brilliant grin again, eyes sparkling with mischief. "If that means a white boy gets confused and goes the wrong way round the food table, then that's the white boy's problem. But if I was with the Ojibwe, it would have been the right way." "That is true. But I am Kenyan Kehaka. You were with me and the other guys. And, knowing you, even if you had been with the Ojibwe, you would have got it screwed up again and walked into them too. So that dog don't hunt, my friend." His grin once again showed complete lack of malice. They both laughed and got back to work at hand. When the dreamcatcher was finished, they had added rabbit fur and the white hair from a white-tailed deer, wild turkey and owl feathers and more beads. The shaman then hung the finished product from a beam and fetched a tobacco smudge. Lighting it, he blew on the end until embers glowed and smoke curled up around the hanging dreamcatcher to the ceiling. Gently fanning the smoke with an eagle feather, he instructed his pupil to repeat what he said, and then incanted a blessing in his language that the other did his best to duplicate. When that was over, the Mohawk asked, "Didn't you say you was going to be giving this to your girlfriend up in Kingston?" "Okay, then we got to transfer the energies of the dreamcatcher to work for her. Right now, with the words you just said, it's working with your spirit. So we got to let it know you're giving it to her, and that when that happens, it should work with her spirit."
You've been listening to Shelf Life, news from the Whitchurch Stouffville Public Library. For more information about library programs and services, check out our website at www.whitchurch-library.on.ca, or you can call the library at 905-642-7323 or toll free at 1-888-603-4292. Or why not visit the library in person at 30 Burkholder Street in Stouffville? Thank you for listening.